Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is an Irish comedian, comedy writer, radio producer, and actor. She's one of those incredibly busy people whose career spans both the UK and Ireland. Yes, I am a bit jealous. You may know her from a whole range of content because if there's not enough work, she just writes her own. She just makes work for herself. So maybe you've seen her sitcom Nowhere First, which she wrote with her.
If you live in the UK, you definitely didn't. Oh, I better shut up. I'm not supposed to talk until now, but like just to say.
That's fine. I'm trying to broaden it out for the Irish listeners as well.
You're being so nice because I'm so Irish. I've listened to you like talk about my achievements and I just want to denigrate every one of them. Like, I just want to say, but I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to let you talk. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and I'm going to do the complete opposite. If you've not seen Nowhere First, it's very funny. I don't care that it's not available to view everywhere. Get it on iTunes. Do what you need to do. Also, if not, maybe a cheaper option that Alison will be more comfortable with is she has a podcast which is free called Wheel of Fortune. She hosts with a fellow incredible comedian, Fern Brady. And yeah, keeps very busy, tours a lot, has one of my favourite show titles called Alison Spittle Needs an Agent. And with that all said, you can guess by now who it is. It's Alison Spittle.
I did not get an agent with that show, and deservedly so. It was a terrible first show where I just had like 40 minutes of material and I thought I filled the rest up with crowd work. And yeah, big mistake. But lovely to be here. But thank you very much, Bobby.
You're welcome.
I'll stop denigrating myself now, but like...
I am proud of all my achievements. I'll say that and then leave it.
You look so uncomfortable.
Oh,
those aren't easy words to your lips, are they?
I swear to God, it's like, you know the way some people don't like scatological stuff because it makes them feel physically sick? I feel like that about confidence about my own abilities. I'm like, no. Because I'm quite mentally ill, Bobby.
I know it's a different podcast and we're talking about dating. But, yeah. So thank you very much for that lovely introduction. Really appreciate it.
You're so funny. I love that already for everything I say, you've got the genuine answer and then you've got, ooh, what I probably should say is this.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, I don't know, you think of your whole life as LinkedIn. I feel like I know the right way to go about things, but I'm compelled not to do that. I don't know why. But so this is an exciting show to go on, because I would say I'm not experienced with dating, but I thought it'd be interesting to go on a dating show and talk about why I'm not experienced with dating.
Yeah. You know? Go on. What's your theory on that?
I'd second thoughts about going on this because I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, because I've been in a long-term relationship now for, it was before the Mayan calendar said that the world was going to end because I'd met this person I liked and I was like, oh no, like... I've only got a few months until we all die. No, you know, blah, blah. So that was 2012, wasn't it? So, yeah, I've been in a relationship with this person nearly 9 years. And I was very much the protector in my friend group. I was very not into dating myself. I would have classed myself as a frigid, which for non-Irish people, because I feel that that's kind of like a slang, is for like a woman who is not into dating and not into sex that much. Yeah, it's very much not into it. And that's what I was before. And I feel like I've missed out on so much. I've missed out on being on the apps. Like, I was trying to think of like what I would do, how I would make myself. Because I presume if I didn't meet the person I met, I would go on the apps at some point, but I can't think of what I would say because we're doing this podcast and you're talking about stuff like, oh, she's a sitcom. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not available over here. And I feel that I would say, you know, my dating profile, I like to laugh. And I'd be like, yeah, but I've got a horrible laugh. Like, I would always bracket it with like just the truth. And like, I don't find low self-esteem in a person attractive. So I don't know why I think I would like... You know, I'm just trying to think of how I would trick people into going out with me. Because I feel like that is dating, essentially. It's like you can't show your real self too quick. People don't like that. From what I gather from looking at other people's... My single friends are amazing because they'll like let me look at like what's going on and stuff. You know, and difference between like rural internet dating and city internet dating is vast. Very, very vast. yeah, just very interested in the world of dating, but I never really got to dip my toe in it that much. So it is something that I just feel I've kind of missed out on. I mean, I'm not willing to like break up with my boyfriend or kill him in order to like date again. But so it is something that I'm just very, very curious about because I don't think I would survive. It's like a zombie film. You know, you always think of you in that scenario. In a zombie film, I'd be the first to die and I'd be the first to like take off the app and go, no, forever alone.
Although I might say that that's a level of insight even there, that you know enough to know that, oh, this stuff is kind of interesting and the apps seem fascinating, but I don't want them.
Oh, yeah.
That lets me know that you do understand the ups and downs of modern dating maybe better than you realise.
Oh, mate, I think it's because I do stand-up comedy and I am looking for validation. Like, there's no escaping that. And I feel like modern dating would tap into that part of me that I'm trying to like paying a professional to get rid of that part of me, you know. A horror story, I remember, okay, so how will I say this without revealing this person's identity? I had a friend, right? She went on the apps a lot, would kind of complain about the pool of people that she was picking from. She was living in Dublin and it was heterosexual men that she was picking from. So I lived with her and I just remember the people that would come back to the house. And it was just, I remember one time she brought back this guy for a weekend. You know, you're sharing a sitting room with them. I can tell they don't like each other. They're watching Anchorman. They're cosplaying as a couple. It felt wrong. Like it felt wrong. Even the way like her head went into his arm. It was just, there were like two inflatable sex dolls just placed on top of each other. There was no real intimacy. They were just in the vicinity of each other. And she was talking about him. She's like, oh, I like him. And I didn't think much of him, you know. But I would say that now because of what happened next, right? So how it ended, how their weekend ended, was he was on his phone. They had just had sex. And she was like lying on his chest. And he was kind of looking at his phone. And he was flicking, right? And she looked at the way his phone was going. And she's like, are you on Tinder? And he was like, what? He's like, are you on Tinder? And he's like, no, no. And then she picked up her phone and apparently you can see when the last time someone was on Tinder on the app and he was on it a minute ago. So like, she didn't even have time to clean him off her and he was on Tinder. That for me was just like, wow, there's no intimacy there. Doesn't matter. Like, I'm not saying that for all Tinder stuff, but that story, it just blew my mind. They didn't see each other again.
Wow. Yes. I agree with that decision. Don't see him again. But yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, right? Because I'm very cynical of the apps and yet I am kind of fascinated in them. And it's a weird balance. And if I'm not careful, it like tips into anthropology as opposed to dating. And I was listening to another podcast recently and one of the kind of dating experts, a matchmaker, was on it. And she described it in a way that I thought was quite helpful, where she said that it's kind of like if there was a warehouse of men near where you live, like if there was just a warehouse of mostly single men, right? They're all saying they're single, mostly single men. And
yeah, I know.
Those options are there, right? And you're aware of it. You would go to the warehouse, you'd have a look around. That doesn't mean you're guaranteed to find love there, but it's something that you would do in addition to the other ways you'd meet them, because you might as well visit the warehouse. And I was like, that is quite a good way of looking at it. And also that helps sort of think about the way in which oftentimes we look at the tools and we think of them as being the problem. So we have the same thing with like mental health conversations around social media, right? Absolutely, there are more things the social media giants need to do to look after us all. But there's also people doing horrible behaviours on social media. There's also people acting wild when they have a level of anonymity, which is more a human thing than a social media thing. And so this kind of analogy helped me think about it in a way where I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe I go to a closing down sale because I might as well, you know, I might as well have a look around. I don't go to that closing down sale, that big warehouse, thinking, oh, I'm going to find some dream outfit here. And maybe that's the level of expectation we need to set.
Like a nice warm coat that will do you for the winter until it falls apart. That would be fine. There are things that you look for. I mean, I was very against being in a relationship with a person because they die. Like that is like the horrible reality of loving something, is that it will go. It's never a nice way either. Even if you're like, have you ever seen the film Amour with Michael Haneke? He directed it. Oh, it's amazing. I saw that on the second date with my boyfriend and I cried so much. There was this visible snot bubbles. It was disgusting. But it's about this lovely octogenarian couple. They enjoy their hobbies together. They watch classical music concerts together. It's a beautiful film about love. But like the lady gets a stroke and it's just downhill from there. And it's probably like at any of their funerals, you'd just be going, what a beautiful love. They've been together so many years. And, you know, or you know that thing when a partner dies and they're elderly and then their partner, their alive partner maybe dies about 6 months later and people go, oh, they died of a broken heart. Yeah, old age as well. But it's a definite contributing factor. And I feel like love is a beautiful thing to look for. But it's so scary. It's so scary to me. And like that app, that warehouse, it's just like, you know, pick your pain. You know, that's how I feel about it.
I see what you mean. I've not thought about it in that way. I don't know if it means that my mind's even darker than yours, where automatically I'm thinking, not if you die first.
Oh, totally. Oh, mate, I would love to die before my boyfriend, but I'm so afraid of death. Like, it's like, it's kind of, you know, like either option. But I've been like deathly afraid of death. I think it's been brought up Catholic since I was a kid. And like a reason why I wanted to pursue comedy or something was because I felt like if I made some sort of mark on the world, it would mean even when I physically die, I wouldn't die. And like I grew up near an old Protestant church with a graveyard where no one ever visited. The church was a ruin at this stage. I'd say maybe 100 years, and the gravestones were still there. But like, it was so overgrown, you couldn't see the names or anything like that. And I felt like that was true death. Like the true death of like, you know, I know this is a dating podcast. I'll get out of talking about death at some point. But I really like chatting about it. But that for me is like the truest of the true deaths. And even when you have someone close to you that dies and the feelings are the same, but your memories kind of fade a tiny bit. And that's so scary. That for me is like incredibly scary. Also, going out with my boyfriend, since before 2012, I can't remember every date I've had with him, every hug, every day. There's nothing, you know, it all melds into one. You've made so many memories with a person that's just lost. And that's mad. But anyway, Tinder, I'm sorry, I totally went off.
No, I love it. Well, here's the risk you've taken, right? Because I have a lot of time for morbidness. And sometimes I wonder if it's a cultural difference, because I think Irish people, we have a lot of time for talking about death. You know, we love like the poetry of it, right? So like me and my mum will recommend like funeral poems to each other. No context, yeah. Nobody's died. We just find ourselves reading it. And my sister like ends up leaving the room because she just can't deal with it. But we could talk about it all day.
Your background, is it fully Irish or is there Irish and English? What's the makeup there? Like, are both your parents Irish?
They are.
My dad's English. Okay. And so they're both Catholic as well.
I've got a Catholic and a Protestant.
Oh, you're a full... Wow. Wow. Oh, my God. So my dad's Protestant, but he's not practicing, and he's British, and my mum is Irish. And the difference between the two sets of funerals is just stark. Like, Irish funerals are for days. The one thing I don't like about Irish funerals that I think they could learn a thing or two is I don't like a lot of funerals happen in Catholic churches still, which is, it is what it is. But the priest will talk about the dead person, but the priest doesn't know anything about the dead person unless they were really involved in the church. Do you know, like, I'm kind of sick of sitting on a pew looking at a guy struggle to kind of think of someone's hobbies. You know, it's as vague as a dating profile. You know what I mean? Like, I want someone who knows the person to talk about them. I've done two eulogies in my life for like the British side of my family. One when I was like 11, which was like definitely my first, what I felt like was my first gig or whatever. That is the only thing. Everything else should be an Irish funeral. Our soup is incredible. Yeah, funeral soup. I mean, it's just vegetable soup, but it's at a funeral. Tastes great. And like the spread, I mean, I do talk about funerals too much in my stand-up comedy. I do feel like I was talking about funerals for about 5 years as a thing, because just the culture of Irish funerals is crazy great. I have a great funeral culture, a shit dating culture. There's no dating culture in Ireland. Like, it's so strange.
Well, yeah, maybe that's the trap we're in of, like, where we're paying attention. It's almost like we're writing poetry about the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But no, I agree, because something that a lot of people here don't believe me on is that I'm used to going to funerals that are bigger than weddings.
Definitely.
You know, they go on longer. There's more drink.
Uh-huh.
You can never rule out that people will be dancing. You know, it's a whole thing.
Well, there's more community involvement as well. I think that's the beautiful thing about a funeral. I mean, I have seen that at a British funeral when my grandma died in Britain. You know, the neighbours were close and stuff. But like the Irish funerals I've been to, I remember a funeral I went to. I didn't know that person at all, actually. But I loved someone that had lost a person. And I went to that funeral and I went to the wake and I just did the washing up all night because it was a practical thing that I could do to help my friend and their family who were grieving. And it felt amazing. It felt like Jesus washing the feet of the... why am I comparing myself to Jesus? I'm not, but...
the Pope's going to come for you now.
I know.
So I am very lapsed Catholic. I'm kind of angry. I'm at a stage of my lapsedness where, like, I'm angry about stuff. But culturally, there's so much stuff that I've taken from the church. You know, there's no words that you can give that person. I've had like horrible, horrible deaths in my family where, you know, no one could go, well, that person went quick, or, you know, that person had a good innings. It's honestly, some of the deaths I've had have been the kind of deaths where you just go, sheesh. Do you know, if I knew a person that had that, I'd be like that. So like, yeah, so I feel like the whole act of helping people at funerals is beautiful. I'm so sorry that I've come on a dating podcast and I've just went on a 10-minute tirade about funerals and death.
No, like, it's partly on me. I'm a little bit too up for this conversation than I should be for the content.
I'm so sorry.
No, I love it. You know what? We're going to break all the rules. I'm going to give you some points for not only the tirade that you've described, but also the fact that it had a kind of like hopeful note at the end there about humility and looking after people.
Yeah, there we go. Yay. Love it. Love it. Thank you for the points.
But I do understand it. And I'm someone that on my more morbid days has said the very unhelpful thing to somebody before when they had a breakup of, well, if you think about it this way, every relationship ends in either breakup or death.
They do. You're both lucky to get out of it alive. They are. Like, that's not morbid.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, that is very morbid to most people. But maybe if that's the baseline I'm coming from, anything else seems better than death. And so on that note, let's segue back to actually talking about dating. You talked about not being very up for dating and putting yourself out there. So how was that like with getting into the relationship you're in now?
I was never like actively looking for relationships. The longest relationship I had before this partner was 2 weeks. But I feel like I've missed out on actively looking for a partner. And I would like that. I think it would have happened that year. Looking back at like the stage in my life and stuff, I think that would have been a possibility. And I wonder, I had no butterflies in my stomachs or worry. Is it about like, are things going to work out apart from like with this person? But I feel like that's a whole facet of life that I wasn't open to myself. And I think like people who date are really brave. I feel like I haven't properly swum in the cold waters of dating and I've just been on the sidelines looking at other people. I'm very happy with my life raft. Like, I'm very warm. I'm having a great time. You know, I'm having a cup of tea. But, you know, you'd like a few stories of being in the cold water. I mean, when I was about 15, I met this guy in an underage disco smoking area, which is very Ireland, to be honest with you. So there was a place for the under 16s to have a fag. And I was out having a fag with my friend. And this guy came up to me. And I'm just thinking, and I'd love to maybe compare it to Britain. Because, okay, I'll go back to the story about this guy in a second. And I'm going to do a quick segue to once I was in Birmingham. I was at a house party with some friends, and this guy told me, and I looked it up, he definitely wasn't, but he told me he was the lead singer of a band called The Twang, which they appeared in NME once, like, and I was like, wow. He had approached me. So I thought that was just a British thing where people approach people. In Ireland, bit by bit, it's become better and better. But when I grew up as a teenager, you still had to get a messenger between a young lad used to send his friend to go over and ask the friend of the girl whether that girl would want to shift him or not. I would say snogging, but I can't. Like, it feels wrong in my mouth to say snog. So then the messengers would kind of negotiate with each other. And then go back to each prospective partner. And then they would go meet up in the middle of the dance floor and just shift the face off each other. So they're just like pawing away. And it was just, that's the way it was done. And I was often the messenger, never the person who really shifted. And so when this guy came up to me in the smoking area of an underage disco and said he wanted to shift me, I couldn't. I was just like, I think I said to him, you don't want to shift me. Like, as if like he was wrong and he didn't, you know, like I was like, this is obviously a mistake. And also, like, I think maybe a few times because I'm fat and stuff, like when I was a fat teenager and like some lads would go up and go, oh, like they would do it as a joke and go like, would you go out with my friend? The friend would be like, fuck off, do you know, like that type of thing. So there was always like that horror of like you showing your feelings in any way and then getting rejected because it was a joke. So I was just very, very, very closed off to the idea of being in love with anyone or even that kind of thing. Anyway, eventually he convinced me that he was correct. His eyesight was correct. He wanted to shift me. So I was like, oh my God, I thought it was the most romantic thing anyone has ever done. I was like, wow. And so we shifted anyway in the smoking area of this teenage disco, which also had a bar in it. This is a wonderful thing. But none of the teenagers were allowed in. But if you're overage, so an adult, you're allowed into that bar, but you weren't allowed near the kids. There was a glass barrier between you and the kids. So you could watch kids underage disco dance, but you couldn't go in. Which I feel like it's a shark cage for nonces. Like, I really felt like it was like, you know, you could look. So he asked me on a date and he brought his friend as a chaperone. I brought my friend as a chaperone. It fell on Valentine's Day. I felt there was a lot of pressure. I bought him some jelly babies because I didn't know what you buy a boy on Valentine's Day. And he bought me a load of roses that I just had never, I just was not used to anyone pursuing me or being nice to me or anything like that. I was feral. I honestly, as a joke, I was like, ah, and I got the roses. I start hitting the side of a Primark, which is called Pennies in Ireland, but we were at a shopping centre, and I just broke the flowers. I just kept hitting the wall with the flowers until the flowers were gone. And I was like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, it didn't work out anyway.
No, but I just want to pause on that. How did he receive the giving you flowers only for you to hit them against the pennies?
He laughed. He took it well. And even, do you know what happened throughout the day? Like, I was just thinking about this guy. Lovely, lovely young man. And I hope he's doing well in life and stuff. But I remember he asked me out via text, because that's how you kind of like sorted out your emotional stuff, was via SMS. I didn't text him back to say yes. I then text my friend because I was just so proud of getting a boy. It was the idea of getting a boyfriend at that stage because I was a teenager. I just wanted to feel like at one of my peers because I was very, very closed off to that. He was just the nicest boy. So I text my mate and I was like, oh my God, I'm going out with this guy. He's after asking me out. But I sent it to him by accident. And I was like, but it was like, I was saying nice things and stuff like that. And then he was like, so I take it, that's a yes. And I was like, yes. So he was lovely. But I broke up from a week after because I just had low confidence and felt I was undeserving of someone being so nice to me. So that is the extent of the dating kind of thing, I feel. Was the rest of everything was just me being totally drunk. Just getting so drunk that you have the confidence to like tell someone that you like them or shift them or whatever. Like it is kind of revolved around drinking.
Although as somebody that doesn't drink, I can tell you I see a lot of that firsthand. Like I became the designated driver from a young age and had plenty of friends, you know, basically falling apart on the street. Yeah, I still don't drive, but I've ended up like a, I don't know what, the designated taxi hailer. A referee is actually what it is, yeah, because I've definitely had to break up. Plenty of things happening, but it's so common that people don't have the, you know, the confidence yet, or they feel they don't have the right level of experience. And a lot of it is down to perception in order to get into relationships and date effectively. It's like everybody thinks other people are doing it really well, and actually it's kind of a mess all round.
Yeah, I think I know through chatting to friends who are dating and what they kind of look for, I would say online dating is a lot like Twitter. Like, I think you wouldn't get into half the rows you get into in real life rather than the ones you get into on Twitter. Like, I feel that you would let stuff slide a lot more in real life. And I think you would let stuff slide a lot more on an actual date. Like, I've seen people get dismissed because they've used, like, a line from The Simpsons as, like, one of their funny quotes or whatever. But if someone quoted The Simpsons to you once, now only once, if they did it a fair few times in a date, there would be... you know, bat signals or whatever, but like they automatically dismiss that person. They're like, oh, why can't they think of something funny themselves? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe they just really like The Simpsons. Or, you know, you get judged totally on the short bits of information that you share. I'm very forgiving. I'm a very like kind of forgiving person about stuff.
Because otherwise people don't have the confidence to put anything on their profile. Because I agree, some people are really intense on it. I know somebody that once unmatched with somebody because they didn't like one of the emojis they'd added.
Right. That's mad. Can you imagine in 40 years' time, the kids are like asking their parents, like, how did you meet daddy? And they go, well, you know, I really like that emoji that he used, and he said he was watching Fleabag and Succession at the time, and I quite like that. It seems so, I don't know though, like, I think I probably would have a different opinion if I was dating on the apps constantly. Maybe I would get sick of stuff. Maybe I'm too forgiving because I didn't really have to have a taste of it. Like, it's so strange. In Ireland, we have this like matchmaking festival in Lister and Varinet. It's quite big, which is just a professional person being that underage boy at a disco saying, will you shift my friend? Where it's like a matchmaker kind of like assesses who you'd be good with. Because, I mean, we're just so fucked up with dating that we have to have this.
And to be fair, for context for the listeners, it's hard to describe how massive this is. Some people will plan their year around going to this. And ultimately, it is just people flocking to a town and various people that say they're matchmakers trying to make a buck off it. And I say that fully with a relative that has been to it and did meet and was set, in fact, I hope she doesn't mind me telling this story. I can't remember the full thing, but essentially she went with her and two friends and they very much went in, you know, as a laugh. So they say, but they were all single at the time. So there was a bit of an undercurrent of you never know. So they kind of went in with that, like, oh, we're just here to see how weird it all is. But they did go to some matchmakers and she got set up with a guy. And on paper, he sounded really good. And they were going to meet at a pub. And it was all arranged by this matchmaker. And she thought, you know what, I have low expectations of this, but you never know. And I think her friends came along and they just kind of sat nearby. And I mean, they were all there together, to be fair. That was the holiday. And anyway, he turned up and he was a local guy in his 70s. And she was maybe in her 30s at the time.
Oh, totally, totally fine. In Ireland. No, I'm being sarcastic. But yeah, like, it's crazy. He was in his 70s.
Yes, and it later transpired that not only that, he was a relative of the matchmaker. So it turned out the whole thing was probably just her trying to offload whatever uncle that had never got married. And he had about half of his teeth.
There's so many of them. There's so many, like, confirmed bachelors. I'm from Westmead, and there's a song called Westmead Bachelor, and there's a bachelor competition. One of my favourite films is this film based on a short story called The Ballroom of Romance, with Brenda Fricker in it. And just the whole, like, there is a side of, like, Ireland doesn't really have, like, a dating culture, but there is this weird needing someone to help you mind your elderly grandparents in the future. I mean, it's not, like, getting like that anymore, but before it was so practical in, like, why you got together with a person. I don't think there was much. It feels like some elderly relatives I have were practically, like, sold. Like, I felt like that. It was kind of like, well, they got introduced to someone and then there was a cow exchanged and, you know, the whole dowry thing.
And
well, I do find that interesting as well, because the language is different, but a lot of the similarities are there with arranged marriage. Yeah. Like that generally isn't described as arranged marriage, but with if you look to that in most other cultures, that's how it would be described.
Isn't that mad? I wonder why that is. I think it's probably because like you just did what your family said. There's a definite kind of like practicality to it. And maybe that's the matchmaking festival is similar in that way of kind of like, oh, just get rid of this last runt of the litter. Also, like with massive, massive families back in the day. So you did have to like marry them off, or you would just have dependent adult children living in your gaff. You know, you couldn't have that. Like, you know, I remember when I just started going out with my now boyfriend, someone contacted me from a dating agency. I had not joined it or anything like that. They were a matchmaker and they were like, we got this guy. I can't even remember what it was, but I'd never been so happy to go. Actually, I have a boyfriend now, so I will never go on this like arranged date. There was one thing I just thought of, and it's just left my head completely now. Oh, here, with this whole internet dating, I do have some sort of like grasp on it in regards to I constantly get catfished on Instagram by accounts that want, like, I don't get catfished because I don't give them the chance, but it's hilarious. They're trying to like romance catfish me because I'm a fat woman. And like, I feel that they feel I'm a target because maybe I haven't had the touch of a person before. Like there's a lot of like, you know, they look at my Instagram profile and they're like, oh, she's definitely going to give 10 grand in iTunes vouchers to someone who says she's pretty. And the type of person that they think I will get catfished by, I'm actually offended. They're often like pretending to be men in their 50s who have two kids. What makes them think I want that baggage? Like, that is a disgrace. Catfish me with just an absolutely conventionally attractive young man who is a pilot. I want someone to lie to me properly instead of thinking what I deserve. And apparently, I deserve a man who works in the army who's 55 and has a kid called Jason who he can never get himself in a picture with. I've tried to like turn the tables on so many catfish before, and it's all the time they're like, I have two kids. I'm like, I don't care, mate. You're not selling me this fantasy. This is not the fantasy I want. I can't give you the iTunes vouchers for your kids. He's like, I've lost my wallet. I'm in the American army. I'm like, I don't care. Do you think someone being in the American army is like a number one thing I want in romance? No.
I'm kind of speechless on this. How often does this happen to you?
It happened to me this morning. I'll show you my inbox right there. Will I read you out like
this guy?
Let's do it. Why not?
All right, I'm taking my phone off airplane mode. All right, let's have a look here.
This is truly the most confusing interview I've done on this show, and I don't hate it. I just don't know what you're going to pull up next.
I tell you, yeah, that's me, baby. Don't stick to the subject much. Here we go. There's a guy called Austin Mendeleev, right? He's got 2 followers, 7 posts. We don't follow each other on Instagram, but he got into my profile today. Hi there, I'm Austin, and I like your profile. Can I be the one to give you need and satisfy your wants? Please contact me ASAP on my personal email. I'll be waiting. I know you'll make me laugh. And if you want to, I'll show you Austin now. So I'm going to put it up to my phone. This is Austin. So this is who I deserve, right? In my fantasy, I deserve a person who looks...
So for the listeners, we're looking at an old guy. He's got a nice smile, but that's most of what we can say. He's got a big tuft of white hair on the top and not a huge amount else.
He looks like he's facing 25 years for a Ponzi scheme. Like, he looks like he...
But do you think that's part of it, right? They're showing you someone that already looks guilty because they think, well, if she falls for this, we can have iTunes vouchers till the end of our days.
So that's the most recent one. I'm going to show you the weirdest one I got. It's this guy here. And I got it in my Instagram profile. So it says, my inbox is riddled with fake accounts trying to catfish me. So I got a guy called Jake Bill, number 6. He goes, hello, how are you doing today? Right? I'm like... This is his profile. He likes America.
Okay.
His dog again.
So we got some pictures here.
And it looks like he's fight training that dog from some of those pictures. So,
oh yeah.
If the listeners want a visual, the worst person you can imagine at the Capitol riots, that's who is in your DMs now.
Definitely, right? He goes like, hello. I just say to him, like, I need you to abandon your dog and publicly renounce your nationality. A girl has needs. So I wanted him to denounce America in order for us to be together. And he's like, send me your email. Let's text on Hangouts. And I said, no, first send me a video of you denouncing the United States of America. He didn't pull through with that, right? I'll see if I get some information about him. I think he's got a kid. He does have a kid. He wants to WhatsApp me. I said, I will not share your soul with a dog. I need to be completely alone with no dogs.
He's like,
it's there's a lot in it. I'll get the thing. Well, anyway, eventually I got him to remove every bit of dog from his profile. And then I replaced my head on his dog there. And I said, you need to put up that picture. And that's my head instead of the American flag. And I got him to put up that as well. I said, I expect full fidelity. So please replace your pictures with these, my love. And he did it in the end. But anyway, sorry, we're really going off track. But so it is that type of guy.
This is incredible because you've basically ended up catfishing him. You've changed his entire profile. So he's probably out there trying it with somebody else with pictures of him, his dog, with the dog with your face on.
Exactly. And I got him to put up, like, someone sent me a picture of their breakfast and I got him to put up that picture too. Then I got people to get involved and they sent me in their pictures. And then I'll show you the other picture. The honey monster. I said that the honey monster was my father and that I needed him to put up that picture. So he did. Oh, here, like this. So anyway, so this guy was like trying to, you know, catfish me or whatever, which... I don't want to shit on people too much. Like, if they're catfishing, like, their lives can't be that good, like, or whatever. But still, it's kind of funny, the standard of person they think they can catfish me with. I don't know why they think they can't lie to me properly about it. I really want someone to pretend that they're Jake Gyllenhaal and just say, like, Alison, oh my God, I can't believe it. I need you right now and iTunes vouchers. I'll be like, yeah, Jake, go for it. And then they don't want to hear about your kids. Sell me the romantic ideals that I want, not this weird reality.
Look, I don't know what to say at this point about that, but I have a lot of respect for it. Trying to think in my head, what would you even describe what you're doing? I know that they're catfishing. I know the descriptor. Are you a catfish pimp? Is that your new job title?
I'm a catfisher. I fish for catfish. That's my thing. I don't know. It's kind of weird because they're trying to manipulate me into doing something that they want me to do. And I'm manipulating them back. You know, also, like, it's very strange. My Instagram DMs are just an absolute pit. An absolute pit of, like, I remember this guy was talking to me. He was messaging me. And he was going, because I've been on telly in Ireland, and he was like, I've just had a wank over you. And I was like, why do you feel that this is pertinent information? I was like, being genuinely, like, why do you feel the need to tell me this? Do you know? And then he was saying, this is not the real Alison Spittle. You're a fake. And I'm like, no, it is. Why would anyone want to impersonate me? Like, why? And then he got, like, really quite horrible and stuff, and quite funny, because I said I was putting this stuff up. I hid his identity and everything. And then he pretended to be a policeman and asked me to take it down because of Irish law. And it was just, like, it was just... Also, the picture of his son in his profile picture. And I just think it's, like, really weird to tell someone that you've had a wank about them while having a picture of you looking happy with your own son. Like, it's just, like, when it's trying to find a partner or to harass a person that you've had a wank over, I feel like a good profile picture is key. Like...
Right, okay. We have to start wrapping up. So you know what? We're gonna take that as your takeaway. I think your rule of the game is if you're gonna catfish or be creepy online to somebody, don't. But if you're gonna do it anyway, at least have a nice picture. I think that's the message I'm getting from you today.
If you're harassing someone online or you're going for a divorce, keep the kids out of it. That's what I say. You know, like, just... He was probably going through both, I'd say, though. But, yeah, it's just mad to be a person on the internet and dating. Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've covered everything, but I feel I have. I feel like I wouldn't have much to say. I have quite a lot, actually.
No, I'm mesmerized. So I don't even know. So I usually choose a rule of the game as well. And I'm trying to think of one to match your level of...
Yeah, of weirdness.
Yeah, can't even think of an adjective. So I don't know if I can do it. This might be one time where you've beaten me. You've won the game. You've won the data game. You've thoroughly confused the host. And I guess my rule of the game is... If you're going to catfish anybody, this lady's ready for you.
I am. If you're going to catfish me, I need you to be 2002 Clive Owen era. So you've got to be like, Alison, it's Clive Owen. I've just come off the set of Closer. I'm in some sort of time machine. I need iTunes vouchers. I'm like, baby, I'm here for you. That's how I feel. And no kids. He's got to be very free of baggage if you're going to catfish me. I don't know why they think that I want a life with their children. I'm not fully objecting to it, but I'm just saying real life is real life. It's fine. Sweep me off my feet. Don't tell me there's two kids that are waiting for me. I don't know what these two imaginary kids are like. They might not like me. I don't want this shit. I mean, my mum got divorced. I didn't get on with my stepdad for quite a long time. You know, I don't want that shit. Like, do you know what I mean? I love him, like, he's a great guy. But I'm just saying, you know, teething problems. I don't want that in my fantasy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, sure. The message from you isn't stop catfishing me. It's like, do better.
Less American war. I'm not going to set up a life of you. I mean, number one, I was very against the Iraq war. Like, I don't... Do you know? Like, I just don't want that in my life. What are we going to talk about? Your kid's in the war.
The Iraq war is the last thing I thought was going to come up. Right, we're going to wrap up there.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me. She is in a relationship, problem. Everybody. Thank you so much. You're a delight.
Best of luck with the edit.
Just throwing bombs at the last possible moment. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.